Okay, this is Parak Vav, Hilchos Zichia Matana, a little bit of a longer parak. Again, we're going to go into certain halachas. Okay, halachah, la'olam, omdim das and dosim. So we always take into account the intent. Hayu hadvarim marin sof daito, osin al pi ha'omed, af pi shelo pirush. So, instances of the sale, of, excuse me, of the gift indicate whatever his final intent is going to be. Okay, again, this is a paragraph of Hilchos Zichia Matana, dealing with halachas that have to do with gifts. And now we're going to deal with the intent of the giver. Halacha, you always take into account the intent of the person giving the gift. So as long as we can tell based on the circumstances of the gift giving, what his intent is, what his true intent is, that's what we operate by, even if he doesn't say this thing out loud. So Ketzach, so Misha Halach B'no L'Medina Sayam. Let's say a person's son traveled to America, and this person thought his son died. So what did he do? He then took all the property, right, and he signed it over to a third party, let's say to Levi, right, in an open and clear way. But then his son returns, turns out he's alive. Then we say the gift that he gave to the third party does not count. It goes, it's considered to be nullified. Shadvar mochichen, because it's clear, sheili yada shvedo kayam, because if he knew his son was alive, well, he knows it, kol he never would give away his property. Therefore, if there's anything left over from his property, bein karka, bein metaltim, what's real estate or movable property, matanaso kayamis. The matana would mean if he intended to leave some over, then the original gift he gave, even if his son turns out to be alive, would be considered to be a binding gift. Let's say a person, takes all his, a father takes all his property, and he signs it to one of his kids, right? Whether he was healthy or whether he's on his deathbed, even if it, even if he made the son in charge of apotropos, he took his son and he made him in charge, basically of the estate, like a guarantor or executor of the will. And he receives the exact same amount as all his brothers. Because we can assume the father's intent was so they wanted the other brothers to listen to this one kid. But if he retained any, if he kept any of his own property, bein b'karka bein metaltel, whether it's movable or real estate, zacha bein matana, then that specific gift, excuse me, that specific son acquires the gift. I'll give up ben var morim. When is his wife shekasov lebein, right? When he mentions one among many kids, bein abanim. Aval im kasov kol nechasov leben. But if he writes all his property to a son, bein abanos, from all the daughters, or labas, from a daughter to a daughter, bein abanos, or among other daughters, ola echa min yorshin, bein shar yorshin, or to one of the inheritors, in contrast to the overall group, apli shloshir klum, even if he didn't keep any of it for himself, right, matanasa kemis, it's considered to be a good gift. Let's say a person, let's say a husband writes all his property over to his wife when he's going to die, bein bari min shlifra, when he was healthy or not, or on his deathbed, apli shakano miyado, right? So even though, what do you call it, even though it's clear that he's doing a kinyan, he does an open kinyan with it, an open transactional action. Lo asa el apitropa shal yoshev. All he really did was made her in charge of the estate. Bein shay yoshev bana mimena o meishia misha acheres o achav echav shal yoshev. When it doesn't matter if the inheritors are from her, meaning, or from a different wife, or from a brother, etc. Mishir kol shu, but if he retains any of the property, bein karka mitatalim, whether it is land or moving property, kansa kol shakasav la, then the wife acquires everything that was assigned over to her. This applies to a woman who's already been married. But let's say a husband writes, our future husband writes all his property to someone he's engaged to, or Lagrusha, meaning he's an ex-husband. Even if he didn't retain anything, they're considered, in this case, a woman's considered like any other person, and therefore the gift is considered to be a good gift. Let's say a person is going to give over all his property to one of his kids and to a third party. So then that other person acquires half the property as a gift. And the other half was left over to the kid. The son who is gets the property, he's considered to be, again, not that he gets the property, but he's the executor of the will of the estate. Halacha Zayin, one second. V'chein. If a person sets aside all his property to his wife and to a third person, so the third party acquires half, and the woman is in charge of the estate of the other half. So if a woman is able to take, acquire all of the of her husband's property as a gift, so then her ksuba basically gets torn up. It's not to be used anymore. So therefore, it was a debt that came out against it. And all, what do you call it? All the property is going to be what do you call it? Is going to be taken off, is taken away from him or her to pay for the debt. Tisharhi below klum, she'll have nothing. So she doesn't have to collect the money due to her by having her ksuba. Why do we say this? We assume that the happiness that she gets from hearing that she got all the property from her husband is enough for her to say, you know what? Any claim against the property, I'm not worried about that taking place, except of obviously this gift that she's receiving. Let's say a person gives over his property to his kids, signs property to his kids, whether they are sons or daughters, and whether he's healthy or on his deathbed, and he assigns even the tiniest amount of real estate to his wife with the others that he's assigning property to. So since he made her a partner, right, among the kids, since she's considered to be a partner, so now what that means is that she's not giving up rights of the ksubasa, right? So now she, again, the ksuba gets written up, and she's not allowed to take any of the property at all, to force it for them. However, she can collect any money due to her because of the ksuba that she has that would be gained by the property afterwards. Let's say the husband just set aside for her for when he dies the gift of movable property, right? Or he kept for himself a small amount of land. The ksuba still stands. But the kana's gonam he. So the gaonim came out with the kana. Even if what it called he retains some of the movable property. Sharihi omeres mimasha shayani gova. So she'll say what? She'll say, I will collect the money from what he retained. Mitoch shetered, right? So since she's allowed to take a little bit from what he retained, she's also given the right to go ahead and further take any property from the estate itself. Now, let's say a person gives over all his property to his kids, and he sets aside a portion of the property to his wife among the kids. And one of the kids dies while the father's alive. She's allowed to collect any money that she would get because of the ksuba from the portion that was supposed to go to the kid who died. Shlo of the ksubasa ella militra mehen, because she didn't really give up the rights of the ksuba. Rather, it's just that she just can't take the property away, but she didn't give up rights to the ksuba. Let's say a woman wants to get married. The kasva kol mechaseya ben levna ben acher. She's allowed to go ahead and take all the property and give it over to her son or to another person. Right? Let's say she marries afterwards, and then with these garsha, she gets divorced, or she meets Baila, or her husband dies. So the gift ends up being nullified. Why? Shazu mivarechasi, right? Because we're going to say that she was trying to get around the halachas of, really chase after or get around the halachas of inheritance. And she only read all her property. She didn't want anyone from her husband to inherit. Right, and what's implied in this is that if she would need it at any time, it would go back to her. Therefore, if she dies while her husband's still alive, so then the recipient of the gift gets the whole thing. Right, but if she retained anything for herself, even if it's some movable property, the gift is good. The even if she gets divorced, Ina Choseres, the ownership does not return back. There's no retracting of the gift. Whenever a person gives away all of his property, when the gift is nullified, and then let's say in such a case, all the property then goes back to the original owners, the person received the gift does not have to give back any of the fruits that he might have eaten. Because even if a person went ahead and said openly that he's given a gift with the intent that it be returned while he's still alive, he's still allowed to eat. The guy who received the gift is still allowed to eat the fruits. Let's say a person sends items, let's say a box of coffee cups, Medina Siam, from another country to obviously his home. Amar Yitnenu El Levana. He says, give these coffee cups to my kids. Hare Eli Tnenu Levana Levanas. They should be given both to his sons and daughters. Haroy Levana, Kigon Svaram, Uchlim Lachama Levana. So that which is more appropriate for boys, like books or weapons, go to the boys. Haroy Levanos, for what's more appropriate for the girls, Kigon Klei Meshi Atzvuim. Like, for instance, what are you called? Colored garments, the Chali Zahav, or let's say like a gold bracelets, Yitlu Mabanos, the daughter should take. Hayurim Zaharim Lakevos, let's say they are appropriate for both. Yitlu Osam Zaharim, then the male should take. Vechena Mishaleach Kalan Levesos Dam. Also, too, let's say someone just sends a box of things, what do you call it, without any specific instructions to his house. Vayivan Kalan Marim Labanos, and there are things in there that are more appropriate for girls. Yitlu Osam Manosa, the daughter should take those. Omdin Das, Hu Shalahan Shalach. Because we assume that's the gifts are for them. Let's say he has no daughters, or his daughters are married. Then the person's daughter-in-laws can take them. Because we can assume that's who he's sending the gift for. When a person celebrates the marriage of his oldest son to a besula in a home, automatically so to speak, the chasan buys the home. This applies when it's the first time the son is getting married. And the father didn't marry off any other kid before his oldest one. And not only that, the father did not leave any property of his own in the home that he designated for his son. This is a halacha that has no real reason to it. And the chachamim came to this decision out of understanding how a person thinks, his intent. Because due to the extent of the happiness and the love, he clearly wants to transfer the house over to him. Because he didn't leave any of the property for himself. That's why if in giving over the gift, he left one thing for his help, like let's say a spoon, and the house is not acquired by the kid. All right. Let's say the father designated for the wedding, the house and everything in the house, or like utensils. Even there's one little thing left over for the father. There's a storage house in there. Then all the kelim are purchased, but the house itself is not. Let's say designated both a house and an attic or second floor. The house is purchased by the kid, but not the second story. So to be designated a house and a porch, the house is purchased, not the porch. One house, two houses, one and the other. Only the one he got married in is the one that the son acquires. Halacha Yud Zayin, one second. Barbiano b'nisuin, we already explained when it comes to halachas of marriages. Shishnayim haya b'neim shiduchin. So let's say, what do you call it? When a couple's engaged, right? Upasak ze'al yidei b'no, v'ze'al yidei b'to, right? And the father of the son and the father of the kala make certain statements, and they say, "V'amru kama ata nosin levanecha kafka." And they say, "How much are you going to give to your son? This much." V'kama ata nosin levitcha kafka. How much are you give to your daughter? This much. V'amru v'kitchu. They get up and they get, and the consecration takes place. Kanu b'amira. So then, words are enough to acquire, to have an acquisition. In kanu b'amira zu. However, this doesn't take place with just words. Acha shas nisuin until the actual consecration of the marriage. Shakol posek daito lichnos. Right, because the intent was is that this will be given over. The property is given over when they get married. They have to be things that are existing in the person's rishus, because a person can't make a kinyan, an acquisition of that which is not coming to the world. And these promises are not able to be written down. Therefore, what do you call it? They're not considered like a contract that would give the married couple the ability to go ahead and take the property away. If a person consecrates a woman, even if the marriage takes place with $1,000, whether each one of them retracts, whether he or she dies, so the consecration never needs to be returned, so to speak. So whatever he gave over for the kedushin is considered a complete gift. There's no retracting. But if the consecration was done incorrectly, then you give the money back. If a person consecrates a sister, the money he gives her is a gift. Because a person knows that kedushin doesn't work for that which is sexually prohibited. Rather, we assume he's not making a mistake. Rather, he made up his mind and he wanted to give her money. That's the type of gift. Let's say a person sends wedding gifts to the Kala while she's still living by her father-in-law. What do you call it? By his father-in-law, whether they're a lot or little. Whether the festive meal for the engagement was eaten or not. Whether he or she dies. Or let's say the guy backs out. All the wedding engagement gifts have to give him back, except for any food or drink that was given. So too, when a person is dealing with, let's say, a small amount of shirts that aren't worth a lot, that were sent over to the Kala's home to live while she's there, in the Shtam Shabahen, right? Let's say she used them, worn them, ubalo, or avdu, and let's say, for instance, they get worn out or get lost, in a mishtam, they have to get paid back. But let's say they are still in good condition, everything's given back, the goba osam b'beizdin, and they are, what do you call it, they can be taken away by court. Because we know they're only sent over for them as a method of compliment and to make her look beautiful. If in contrast, the woman goes back on the engagement, everything has to be returned, the food and drink, so you pay back the lesser amount. The Gonim agreed, let's say the amount of the food and drink is worth around six, whatever, zuz or dollars. Mishtalames arba im chazarba. She'd have to pay $4, so to speak, if she goes back on the engagement. He gave her these gifts with the understanding that she would not go back. So the Rambam's Rebbein Paskin, she maya minag medina, she asked all them suda. Let's say the custom locally is that when there's an engagement, every future chassam makes a party. He feeds his friends and gives out money to people who work with him. And that's how you normally do. But she goes back on she retracts on the engagement. She's got to pay back everything. Right? Because she caused him a financial loss. So if you cause your friend to have a financial loss, you must pay. How much was given out? Because it's not a situation where he can take a shvua and what he called and collect the amount that he thinks he's owed. That is Perek Vav, and we'll continue with Perek Zion next time.